afternoon, and welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
Well, Bill, how's it going this week?
Hey, it's going pretty good. Nice, cool weather here in Redding, California.
I know.
What are we sitting about, 75?
I'm wearing a jacket. So great.
Yeah.
And the free advertisement of the week goes out to the hot water plumbing hero, Robert Gutierrez, here in Redding. He came in to replace some faucets for us. It was a huge pain. And it's always nice. I've never really hired a plumber to do something like replace a faucet. But it just looked like it was going to be a huge pain.
And it was.
So I was working downstairs, and I hear, dun, 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 dun. I hear the walking upstairs, and I hear the garage door shut. Comes back in, dun, 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 back into the bathroom. I went upstairs. I'm like, how's it going? He goes, I'm having some problems. I was like, I know. I could hear the dad walk upstairs. Dad walk, dead giveaway. Just confirmation. It was a great idea that I did not do that, that we did not do that ourselves. So I'll post his information on the site for today. But the hot water plumbing hero is truly a hot water plumbing hero. And today we're talking with Fred Dasmalchi. And let me update my page because we added people. I'm going to have him introduce his other two friends. And we're going to discuss Iran. We're going to talk about the kind of the deal, how they got here, what their vision for the future is, and all of those things. And to give it some context, Fred is a resident of Sacramento, has been a human rights activist for over 30 years. He was arrested once in 1980. I'm not going to hold that against him. That normally makes him sound like a bad guy, but that makes him a good guy. He was in the city of Mossad. After that, he was forced to leave the country. And he came here. Good thinking, Fred. He increased his human rights activities to be the voice of people in his country. He has been active in this in his community, mobilizing the Islamic community in Sacramento against the Islamic fundamentalists in Iran. I met him at a Marco Rubio event with his friend Ross, who has since passed. We miss Ross. Ross was a really nice man. And met them like 15 years ago, and I have learned and then roped Bill into the radio, and then we've all learned lots of things that we would not have found out had we just listened to what was on the mainstream media. They're very involved in the Iranian-American community of Northern California, and I have all of that posted. There's a tremendous amount of information on there, actually, and today is June 28th, 2026. If you want to jump on wethepeopleradio.us, you'll find it all there. So those are all the announcements for today. And so, Fred, you get to be the master of ceremonies, or the ringleader, I guess, depending on how we look at it.
Hi, Aaron. Hi, Bill. And
hello, Fred.
Thank you so much. Hi, how are you, Bill? How's everything?
Doing well. It's good to hear from you.
Thank you so much for Aaron and Bill for inviting us. I really, really is honored to be on your show and appreciate it, you know, the voice you're giving to us. And
well, the suspense has been killing us because we have wanted to have you on, and then you had the big event in Paris, and there's been a lot going on in the world. So we're grateful that you guys were able to make the time, because there is a tremendous amount happening, and we don't always get the whole story. So
yes, absolutely. This is a very, very important time. Because what's going on in Middle East and the war is going on right now, and there are a lot of questions. First, I would like to appreciate it for remembering my friend Ross. You know, thank you so much for Aaron for mentioning Ross' name, and we all miss him. He was also one of the human rights volunteers that was working very hard for regime change in Iran.
Yes.
Therefore, briefly, if it's okay with you, I will introduce, I will give some information about our activity.
Yes, please.
I am a board member of the Iranian American Community of Northern California. Overall, we are supporting the regime change in Iran by the people of Iran. and practically we're trying to be a voice for Iranians. And also in that, we are very active covering Congress and Senate. For example, in Congress, we have the, during the Christmas, we have the Christmas party. We do a lot of briefing in Congress. We have a lot of resolutions to support the human rights in Iran and condemn terrorist activity of Iranian government. For example, House Resolution 166, House Resolution 1188, or Iran Resolution 100, which usually all our resolution is bipartisan, and also all our resolution usually we got the majority of the Congress. For example, the latest resolution, House 166, we have about 230 members of the Congress that they support that, and that resolution is by Congressman Tom McClintock. He's a very much leadership regarding to Iran. And to be honest with you, we are all, myself and my friend, we are all volunteer for human rights, and practically we are very active, try to be active towards the free Iran and have a secular republic, a non-nuclear Iran. That is what we are looking for, and that's what we are working for, and trying to be helpful in that area. Today, I have two of my friends that are joining me. If it's okay, they can introduce themselves, please. Thank you. Chano, you want to start?
Yeah, sure. Hi, Aaron, Bill. Thank you for having us in your wonderful radio program. I'm Shanaz, and I'm a healthcare consultant for Center for Healthcare Quality. I came to U.S. Since Fred mentioned how he got to the U.S., I thought I should share mine. About almost 47 years ago, I was a teenager. My family, they were so fed up with me. They sent me here. I arrived in U.S. almost a week before the hostages, U.S. embassy hostages, was taken over. And since then has been such a ups and downs of what's going on in the country that I came from. I've never been able to go back. But at the same time, I wanted the same freedom, the same values that we have in this beautiful country for Iran. So that's where I stand. And thank you for having me.
Thanks. And that's a very common, seems like all of Fred's friends came here and then said, gosh, we'd really like to fix the country we came from, but either they were not allowed to go back. Are you allowed to go back? Probably not anymore, huh?
No, I'm under blacklist.
Yep. Okay. You know, we seem to gravitate toward the blacklist people. We have a lot of blacklist Chinese people too, so
yeah, blacklist for a terrorist regime. That's a badge of honor, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
The same way they're putting, like, former Secretary Pompeo is on blacklist of the regime and even China, you know what I mean? And also other U.S. officials, they go on the blacklist of these criminal regimes.
It's always nice to be hated by your enemy, right?
Yeah.
if you know you're on the right team.
Yeah.
And then we have a third player.
Yes, my name is Jarlath Mirabtov. First, I would like to thank you again for giving us the opportunity to be on this program. And I'm not going to repeat what my friends already mentioned. Just like the other two, I came to U.S. way back 1977 to do my graduate studies. And I'm a retired transportation engineer, worked for City of San Francisco. And I'm politically active in support of democracy in Iran. And that's what has been our goal. Democracy. We need democracy for Iran and the region. You know, that's what we have been pushing for. So to that extent, I'm glad to be here, and any question would be happy to answer. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Absolutely. Well, I think it's really important. We spend a lot of time hearing from people who talk about this issue but don't come from there. That's not their country of origin. They don't know the culture other than what they have learned. But you have all lived that. And I think the most interesting thing for me in a lot of this is that Iran was not ever really, like we were talking about in this country, there's, you know, the terrifying trend towards socialism here. And so, but even if the far left socialist and however you view it, but even if those folks came in and started to kind of rewrite things in our government, we could go back. We could go back to our constitution and reset at some point. You don't have that reset point. From my understanding, you literally have to create something new. Is that right?
Absolutely, you're right. If you look at the history of Iran, it has been more than 120 years that we have two systems. One was the Pahlavis before that, and one is this Islamic Republic. The both of them, the Iranian people, they never had a voice. They never had any election, real election. And they never had a freedom. And I think this is a good chance for us to talk about it, that what direction do we need to go? The main question, Iranian government is not practically is causing a lot of problem in that area for everybody and is not stable. Therefore, the question maybe we can help today, what direction shall we go to bring the stability to that area? Especially after the war right now, there are a lot of questions about what direction, what is next, or what next question maybe, how the regime change in Iran coming, or maybe what will be the future of Iran, and what the people of Iranian, how organized they are for regime change. What is situation of the last three uprising? Is it there is more uprising coming or not? What happened to the negotiation between the Iran and USA? What is the outcome? These are all good topics that the answer will fit to your question, Aaron.
Well, we're going to, since it sounds like you have actually planned, we're going to let you make sure we hit all of those, because all of those are important, and that doesn't, you know, much of what we hear in the news is only a couple of minutes long, and in a couple of minutes, you can't get to the bottom of any of this, and I'm sure after you have all lived in this country for a while, you realize Americans, they don't even know a lot about America sometimes, and they certainly don't always know much about the rest of the world. And so I think it's important to educate people, because they look at everything through the lens of our country. And the first really big misconception is that you're going to go back to a time before these people took over the country, and it'll all be great. You know, blueprint's already there. You're going to go back and do that. And I don't think people realize when you're talking about a resistance movement, you're like retooling the framework of your country. It's a much heavier lift than just getting rid of some bad people and kind of going back to a place you've already been. You've never even been to the place you want to go. I think that's kind of exciting, but super hard. How about this? I just realized it's, as Bill pointed it out, Good job, Bill.
Oh, thanks, sure.
Thanks for being the boss of me.
Not a problem.
we have to take a really quick break. We're going to come back, and we're going to start working down Fred's topics there, because I think they're all excellent. And we thank our guests for being here today. You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Everywhere around the world, they come to America. Every time that flag's unfurled, they come to America. Got a dream to take them there. It seems so far away. We're traveling light today. In the eye of the storm. In the eye of the storm.
Great choice, Aaron.
Well, I figured since they all came to America, we had a song for that, right? So, it seemed fitting. All right, so now that you're here. And have been here, and you're looking back and thinking, all right, I really applaud all three of you, actually, and all the people in your organization for not just saying, well, we got out, we have a good life, you know, kind of sucks to be everybody who's stuck back there under all of this and just move on with your life. It takes a lot of effort to stay tied to that and stay working, for the freedom of the people that are there. That's a big deal.
Thank you so much for that. Of course, you know, it is, as a human, it is an honor to be helpful. And based on what we know from Iranian culture and all my friends, we have been here so many years in the United States and enjoying the freedom. United States is an honor if we can help in this such a critical time. We can be helpful, you know, but with what you are doing is a blessing for us.
Well, I think that's great. So, Fred, you had a long list. Let's get into some of that. Where would you like to begin?
I think if it's okay with Bill and you and my friends, you start with the war, if it's okay. What's
sure.
going on right now? What direction is going? Is it okay?
Oh, yeah. We have no needs. We're just following along.
Because, Aaron, I think a lot of people, they are asking the question, the main question, what is the next? I mean, what's going to happen now? We know the MOU between United States and Iran is on working process. Therefore, the question is that what direction is going? What's going to be the outcome? The other question, the war cannot go for a long time. Therefore, what happened to the situation of the war with Iran? And also, next question is it bombing and war is going to bring regime change in Iran or not? Therefore, I think these are valid questions. If we can analyze this question, I think it's going to be helpful. I think these are good questions.
Okay.
Therefore, I will start first. I would like to say that us, Iranian people, we really, really appreciated what President Trump has done for elimination of the supreme leader of the Iran. That has been by 90% of the Iranian inside and outside of the Iran, they really celebrate that. And we are so thankful to the administration by doing that. Because, as you know, Supreme Leader Khamenei, he was an evil person. And he caused not only so many Americans, you know, in Iraq, they got killed, and so many people in Middle East, you know, have been killed by the Iranian government system, the way they have done in so many countries. But we realized that during the bombing in Iran, there was no uprising. What I would like to add, when there is a bombing in Iran, it's very hard for Iranian people to come on the street and do the uprising. Because what happened during that time, everybody's thinking about their family health, the practically to escape, and then they have seen to word that the uprising is happening. Therefore, what we said, practically the bombing is not going to bring regime change in Iran. Therefore, in that case, what we have seen after the first war, Israel and Iran, we saw after some time, 2-3 months, there was gathering of the people on the street for example, the worker, the retired worker, the student, the nurses. They come on the street and they demand for better situation. And usually after that, when there is so many, so all the union, all these people, they come on the street, then uprising is happening. Therefore, what you're thinking, hoping is that by understanding that, therefore, the war in this case is helping Iranian government to stay for longer. What they do, they use the war as a practically to increase the number of execution, and also practically that is not going to help for regime change. Even though it's appreciated the pressure, as much pressure, sanction we can do against Iranian government. But that time is very, very hard to bring regime change. Therefore, in that case, I would like to say that for last 40 years, we have seen what happened, if you remember, the Biden administration, they put money in the airplane and they sent to Iran. That is not practical. That is not helping. Therefore, the way I look at it, go back to that MOU, that between United States and Iran, the nature of Iranian government is not for change. Iranian government cannot change their behavior. Therefore, they are just trying to survive, and they took as much pressure to survive under the Trump administration, therefore they won't change, and then maybe, they can survive. That is practically their policy regarding to the negotiation. I mean, the negotiation is good. There's nothing wrong with negotiation. But the way we understand 40 years experience of this Iranian government, they cannot change their behavior. And they're going to stay same path, practically. That's why we think the key to Iran is the organic change by the Iranian people. The Iranian people last 3 years, they have done 3 major uprisings. So it shows they are ready for regime change. Therefore, the thing that is missing in this negotiation is the Iranian people. That is what we need to add to this element to bring the regime change. I, if my friend Shahnaz and Jawad, they want to add to it, or if you have any question, please.
I just want to add, the clerical rule has lasted for 48 years through warmongering, a massacre of the people, execution, imprisonment, and they're well known to be a warmonger regime. They live with crisis. By suppressing its own people, exporting its medieval ideology and terrorism to the region through its proxies. And right now, at this time, with the war, which it was mostly targeted the IRGC and the regimes, missile centers, nuclear, whatever, facilities. This has put more pressure on Iranian people. It actually increased the internal crisis within the country, and at the same time, regime, by suppressing the people, is trying to survive. So the regime, the war has helped the regime, in my opinion, although it destroys a lot of their infrastructures, to use it against the people. And as Fred says, the goal of our organization, our thing is the regime can only be changed by the people, with the fresh boots on the ground. The bombs and missiles cannot change the regime. And as long as this regime, this system is in place, there won't be real peace in the Middle East for the world. Regime is not going to ever abandon its nuclear program. And as you see today, there was news of that they are in their thing, why are we doing that? So there's an internal crisis going on that they're fighting with each other. Who is dealing with these MOU? While the negotiation is going on, they are attacking ships. Today they attacked U.S. Military bases in Bahrain and Kuwait. So this regime asking for the war, and it just, in my opinion, that's how it's lasted so long. Hmm. Thank you.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well, the other
can thing? I add a point?
Yes, please.
Well, I would like to give a bigger picture of the whole situation. We are against war. We are against appeasement policy, and we are for regime change. So this is the picture. Why we are against war? It goes back to the nature of the regime. This regime, the Islamic Republic of Iran, what they call Islamic Republic, which is not to me neither Republic nor Islamic. Anyway, I'm not going to get into that. But
yeah,
this regime is way backward. It's very reactionary. And because it cannot deal with social, cultural issues of 21st century, therefore they need crisis. And since day one that they came to power, or they were brought to power, they have been creating crisis one after another in order to get the attention of the people away from the main issue. So we need to, when the society is actually in normal situation, they tend to do uprising. So that's why we think that, you know, there shouldn't be any external war. There has been a war between Iranian people and the regime going on for more than 50 years. And, sorry, my dog is barking.
We have one at home, too.
Okay. I'm going to let him out. So that's what is going on. You know, this is a reactionary regime which needs crisis to live. You know, without crisis, they cannot survive. So war is a crisis. It's a good issue to give to get the public's attention away from the main issue. So that's why we are against war. That's why we are against appeasement. And we are for regime change. We want to change this regime and establish a democratic republic, a system where people can be represented, where women's rights can be respected, in minorities, you know, can be respected. So that's all for now. Thank you.
Well, and in all of that, what's the mechanism for the people to actually complete the transformation? Because our understanding, my limited understanding, is that they're basically unarmed.
Aaron, this is a really good question. That is a good topic that we have a lot of good information for that.
Oh, good.
Therefore, I just summarized that based on last conversation. We practically what we said, we like sanctions, we like pressure on the Iranian government, we like get rid of the IRGC. We appreciate all the help, but the conclusion become that the bombing is not going to regime change because Iranian government has got more than 1 million IRGC. That and also practically, I don't think the people of the government of United States or the people of United States and nobody wants to send a, you know, full-scale war because in Iraq we send about 150,000 soldiers to be able, you know, to revenge event to the war in Iraq. But in Iran, the area is three times wider. Area is bigger than Iraq, and we need to send a lot more soldiers. And I don't think that is a good option. The reason for that is because now we go to the next topic to show you that there are a lot of Iranians for regime change, that we don't need to send the boots on the ground. When there is Iranian people, they are ready to fight, and they show that. But go to your question, how to arm, is it they have the arm, or do they need the arm, or what's going to happen? And to answer that question, we cannot just go and say, okay, let's send arm to the Iranian people and throw the arm at them. That is not working. We need to have an organization. That organization need to be inside Iran to train the people. It takes time to train them and teach them how to use and how to be organized and to have a network. In Iran, you won't see that much on the news, but there is a network of the Iranian resistance inside Iran. Practically, NCRI, National Council of Resistance of Iran, 12 years ago, they started on this project. They call resistance units inside Iran. Therefore, first, I would like to say thank you so much for putting information online. Therefore, in one of the information you put online today about the resistance units, MEK, on February 28th this year, on Monday, 5 days before the war starts, 250 members of the resistance units, they attacked Tehran, the headquarters of the Supreme Leader Khamenei. That area is called Motahari. There is more than 5,000 IRGC is guarding that, in that time, Khamenei headquarters, and there are a lot of government buildings in that area. The people who are familiar with the regime, they know that the most secure area in the Iran, in Tehran, is in that location. Therefore, 250 members of the resistance units, they were able to infiltrate in that area and start attacking. So they tried to get, before the war, they tried to get rid of the Supreme Leader Khamenei. Therefore, from 6 o'clock in the morning till 2 o'clock, there was a fight in that area. And about 100 members of the resistance units, they got killed or they are missing. By Iranian organization, which is very strong network inside Iran, they provide those names of the missing 100 people to the United Nations. And I have those names from what the age they are and mostly young people. And they got killed or they are missing. And the good news about another 150 members, they came back safely to their bases. This is one example of what they're doing. I checked the news today on social media for the resistance units. It has been only last night. There has been 35 operations inside Iran. So just give you another example. The name of the cities they have done is Karaj, Mashhad, Tehran, Saqqes, Boneh. Therefore, regularly, resistance units, they are very active in Iran. But unfortunately, the media is not getting that much coverage on that one. I would like to add two more activity of the resistance units in Iran.
Hold that thought, Fred.
Sure.
And let's do a quick break so we don't have to cut you off in the middle of the deal. I did find a really good song, too, for Javed, so I thought he might think it was funny. And then we'll be right back. You're listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Who let the dogs out? was nice, the party was bumping.
Hey, V.I.O.
And everybody having a ball.
Hey, hey, V.I.O.
Until the fellas start the name calling.
V.I.O.
And the girls respond to the call. I have a poor one shot out.
Who let the dogs out?
Just like everybody else.
Pressure.
You've only had to run so far, so good. But you will come to a place where the only thing you feel are loaded guns in your face, and you'll have to deal.
Great song.
Huh. There is a lot of pressure. But we couldn't resist the dogs.
Yeah.
thank you for the song.
Yeah, we had to get the dogs in there. I'm like, I have the song. Might as well play it. Okay, so go back to your 2 points, Fred, so we don't derail you with the dogs. Huh?
No, thank you for the song, and I'm sure my friend Jawad is going to be very happy.
Thank you.
We're dog people, so you know.
Aaron, Bill, what I was trying to say that we have a very good hope for regime change in Iran. The reason for that is we have a strong network inside Iran. And right now, the Iranian government is at the weakest point. And I believe it's not going to be for a long time. But what I'm trying to mention, what's the reason for that? The reason there is outside of the United States, outside of Saudi Iran, what activity the NCRI or Iranian resistance is doing internationally, and what they are doing also inside Iran. I was trying to prove, to show you that how strong is the network in Iran, and for to be able to send that many fighters to go to that secret area is not easy. It's very, very, very hard job and needs a lot of communication inside Iran. And that shows the power of the Iranian resistance. Two more samples I have in 2023, during the mass uprising, we lost 3,600 missing of the resistance units. Those names also is ready and is provided to International Amnesty and United Nations. Another one, in 2025, we have more than 2,000 of resistance units are missing, which their name has been identified by Iran, by NCRI. My point is that there is a lot of good hope, but what is missing in the equation in negotiation is not talking about human rights in Iran and is not covering, the execution in Iran, but there is another element that is inside Iran. And that's what I try to explain. If you have any question before going to the NCRI, if it's okay with you, and what internationally NCRI is doing, how much support we have, what we're looking for inside Iran for future of Iran, what practically we're fighting for, and if you have any question regarding to resistance units inside Iran, we'll be happy of my friend Shahnaz or Jawad they want to add, or Aaron or Bill, if you have any question.
I wonder, we hear a lot about the IRGC really kind of gumming up the works as far as the negotiations go. How much pull do they still have, and is that power waning a little bit, or are they still going to be the ones that we're going to have to contend with?
It's a very good question. Shannon, would you like to answer that question?
Yeah, I can just say, so IRGC, Iran Revolutionary Guard, actually was created by Khamenei, the first mullah that ruled Iran, to protect the revolution, to protect their clerical rule. And this organization has direct report to Supreme Leader. They controlled the whole economy. I mean, the economy that has the money, has the power, and compared to U.S. military, U.S. military is nothing in compared to them. I believe, my opinion, right now it's IRGC that's running the country. The son of Khamenei, Mojtaba Khamenei, which is missing in action, he's nowhere to be found. We just here and there hear some statements from him. And right now, IRGC is the one that actually protecting and facilitating the nuclear program, the oil industry, the whole import-export industry. So they have a lot of money and power inside Iran, and that's how they feed their proxies in the region, the Hezbollah, the Hamas, the Houthis. They're all under the control of IRGC. So IRGC is the one that I believe are people for the MOU, they are the one that dealing with. And the guy, Alibaf, the one that is the thing, he's the guy that not too long ago was chanting death to America. That's the one that promoting that having a nuclear program is a means of their survival and superiority. IRGC is the one that should be targeted in all fronts, not just militarily. We are glad that U.S. have them on a sanction list, and those sanctions should be enforced. But European countries, they're still thinking about it, to put this terrorist organization on the sanction list. So that was the question about the role of IRGC. IRGC is the one that controls the prisons, who should be executed. You know, they control the judicial system. So they have their hands in everything in that part of the country. One thing that I wanted to add about the inside Iran, what is happening, if there's a long history way before most recent uprising that led to all these uprising, the most recent one that has, you know, thousands of people that were killed. NCRI, well, I'm not going to go through that right now. So maybe in another section I can talk about the role of NCRI and how it has been helping with the internal boots on the ground, how they are fighting and trying to get rid of this regime. And again, our motto is no war, but also no appeasement. And the regime change should be by the people of Iran. We don't ask for any monetary help. We don't ask for any arms. We believe that they can do it without those help.
Well,
so that's it.
There are so many. What did you say? There are a million people in the IRGC?
Yes.
No, I didn't say. Is it 1 million or 150,000 members? The active members of IRGC.
I thought somebody said a million, and I thought my head was going to explode.
Yeah. I think they're so there's IRGC is the arm, more trained form of the thing, and they have Basiji. Basiji are like regular people that they use them, put them in motorcycles to go fight the rallies or something like that. They're more Basijis than IRGC. The IRGC is the highly trained.
Okay. But they have minions. So.
I don't think there are millions.
Minions. Like they have little groups that go out and so bottom line is everybody's being watched at some level.
Exactly.
Okay, because that's what it sounds like to me. Like
every corner.
Yeah, you can't do anything, and they're keeping tabs on you. So, pretty hard to create a revolution when you can't.
Yeah, they control the internet. They control the internet. They control the media. Yeah, I mean, for 3 months there was total blackout of internet in the country. They were afraid to have that. You know, they don't want people to see what's going on in the world.
Well, I think a lot of people were a little bit confused at the inability of the people to really rise up and take their country back when, you know, in the heat of this argument over there. What do you think they need to do to toss the IRGC out? Is that even possible?
It is possible. The way Mathew Rajavi or NCRI that the way they are doing right now is, we know when there is an uprising in Iran, the Iranian government is at the weakest point. And when there is an uprising, if you have an organization with arms and direction and the network, like resistance units, they are all practically, they are all working together. In that time, they have a job to do. In that time, they have the leadership to do. In that time, because each resistance unit during the uprising, there is 50 or 20 more people, young people are joining them. And that will be the force for change. That's what we are working on, resistance units completely inside Iran last 12 years, to create that environment of, therefore, when there is an uprising, that happened. But if you look at each uprising, each one compared to the previous one, it become more radical. And also during this last 3 months, because of the internet was shut and the people economy was getting worse, and therefore 2 million people, they lost their job in Iran. That is creating a lot of problem for Iranian government. And that's why I was trying to mention that usually we'll see the system, how they start small demonstration in different cities, which we can see right now in Iran, and then it gets bigger and bigger, and then suddenly the uprising will come. During that uprising, we have to be ready for regime change. It may take another one or two times, but eventually it's going to bring the regime change. That's what Maryam Rajavi is working on, to practically unite the Kurdish, the Baluchis, all the forces inside Iran. Therefore, we're trying to say future of Iran belongs to everybody, and everybody we need to share to come up with this system to bring the regime change. Then Iran belongs to all these different nations, then practically is bringing unity, more strength for resistance units to change the government themselves, and then practically bring the regime change in Iran.
We have just a minute left before the news, but quick question. If the uprising, does the IRGC then kind of go to work for them? Or do they all have to quit? Or do they all go to prison? Or what happens to these people? Where do you put them? They've got all the arms and the training and...
That's a good question.
I was just curious.
Would you like after the break to talk about that?
Mull that over. And Shavad, we gypped you. Every time you try to get a word in edgewise, we talk over you. Sorry about that.
Okay.
The magic of the magic of the conference call, isn't that how it always works out? So we do have to take a little break for the news. We're not sure what they're going to say, but it isn't going to be as interesting as this. So you should stick with us, and you can find out what's really going on in the Iranian resistance from Fred and Shahnaz and Shahid. And I found a song for the IRGC, so we'll play it now for you.
When I'm in the shower, I'm afraid to wash my hair, because I might open my eyes and find someone standing there. People say I'm crazy, just a little touched, but maybe showers remind me.
Dream of dreams really do come true. Someday you wish upon a star, wake up where the clouds are far behind. Be where trouble melts like lemon drops, high above the chimney top, that's where.
Debating on the music coming back, and we thought, you know, it's almost like a Somewhere Over the Rainbow moment. Alex and I shouldn't work together, because we both have kind of a quirky sense of humor, and unfortunately we don't include Bill in our plans, so there's no adults in the room.
You hit the nail on the head with that one, I think.
I got carried away after the dog song. So this is the second hour of We the People. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Kunduff.
And we're back with our friends, Fred, Shahnaz, and Javed. Did I get them right?
Yes.
Really been working on
Thank
it.
Thank you.
You know, that's the problem about being born in this country. We only speak one language, and we stink at doing foreign names. But, yeah, try not to butcher it too bad. So, I forget. Where did we leave off?
I was doing good.
I think we were talking about
We were talking about how Javed never gets a word in edgewise.
Yes.
All right, it's all yours. Go, Javed.
You asked a question, the IRGC and what should be done about them.
Yes.
I think in order to really understand that question, and the answer to that question is to understand Iran better. Iran is a big country. It has more than 90 million population. In terms of territory, Iran is bigger than the whole Europe. And why we say that no war, war is not the solution? Because you cannot bomb a country of that nature, you know, and make a regime change. You definitely need boots on the ground to be supported by aerial. So, and we are definitely opposed to any kind of, American boots on the ground. We don't want any Americans to be killed in Iranian territory. We think it's the Iranian responsibility to change that regime. So that's why we are against war. And we are against appeasement too. This dealing with the IRGC, which is already on the terrorist list of U.S. and European Union, recently passed a resolution to that extent, and England is doing the same thing. So it's basically appeasing that regime.
Mm-hmm.
And appeasement policy has failed through history. You know, in World War II, Western countries, European countries, tried to appease Hitler. And that failed. And eventually they went to war with Hitler, which they paid a lot of prices for that. So we are saying that we don't want war, we don't want appeasement, but support democracy, support the people. Let the people change the regime and be responsible for that change. And so that's that. And then on the question of what are we going to do with that huge IRGC, one thing that I know and I've heard from many people is that the main body of that force is not happy with the system. So it's only the top brass which is really enjoying, you know, financially and the power of that regime. So once this regime is overthrown, the regime change is done by the Iranian people, the main body of these will join the people. They are not going to stay there. So, and again, the opposition has a plan that eventually even the top brass would give them fair trial to go on trial, public, and, you know, be tried. If any crimes committed, they will pay for it. That's basically where we are coming from.
Yeah.
So I don't want to take it.
I just want to add the current situation inside Iran that could, you know, help with toppling the regime by the Iranian people, and the IRGC cannot do anything about it. There is triple-digit inflation inside Iran. For example, the simplest, cheapest thing, the bread prices triple, quadruple, and this is, the large population is very poor. There's a harsh living conditions, as you know, during this 3 months of shutdown, internet shutdown, millions of people are out of jobs. And the regime, by executions and imprisonment, is trying to control the people, and by blaming it on the war. But we know, the history has shown, this is not going to be the best outcome for the regime. It is in the favor of the people and the resistant organization that is trying to bring democracy and peace and freedom to the Iran.
How do you feel about the ceasefire? Do you think this is giving the IRGC a chance to kind of reset and rearm, and or do you think they are reading the cards that their days are numbered?
We said war is the regime shield against the popular uprising,
mm-hmm.
while the peace and ceasefire is like a poison for them. Either way, they are not in a good shape. So this is my opinion. That's what I've heard from a lot of experts that know this regime well. So either way, it's not in their final favor.
Mm-hmm.
Bill, can I add one more important factor in this equation?
Sure.
What happened also here is when we went to Iraq, there was the Iranian MHA. They have a lot of bases in Iraq. And in that time, National Liberation Army of Iran was very, very strong, and they were attacking Iranian regime. And in that time, when we went to the Iraq, USA, when we went to Iraq, we disarmed MHA. Right now, I have the news press from the headquarters of United States Central Command, dated May 17, 2003. Quote, update on consolidation of the Mujahideen Khalq MHA. Coalition force are consolidated. 2,139 tanks, armed personnel carrier, arbitrary pieces, air defense artillery pieces, and miscellaneous vehicle, formerly in the position of the Mujahideen Khalq MHA forces. Quote, my point is that the natural and other factors we have to fight against this IRGC is National Army, National Revolution Army of Iran. They are very strong, and they are strong. They start expanding inside Iran. They are underground, but they are planning also for regime change. Therefore, there have been so many fights between the Iranian resistance and Iranian regime that they have a lot of experience. Therefore, as you know, we have more than 2,500 members of the resistance of the MEK in the Albania, which all of them, they are very much experienced, and they're very much like a general. They have a lot of experience. That's why right now one of our requests to the United States is to give back our weapons. Therefore, this is the weapon that in that time they took from Iranian opposition during the war, and that time we want them back to go back to the Iranian people, and we can use against the Iranian government. My point is there is a lot of fighters. There is a lot of people that want to fight against this regime inside Iran. That's why we are talking. There is no why when we have all this available to us, we don't need to send the boots in Iran or soldier in Iran or expend taxpayers than they can do it themselves. Therefore, I can send you the copy of this statement from the headquarters of the United States, which is on May 17, 2003.
Okay, so that's only 3 or 4 weeks old, really, so it should be fairly accurate.
Yeah. We have all these tools to regime change in Iran. IRGC, they're strong, but their weakness is Iranian people. That's what, they're afraid of Iranian people, and they do everything to practically start uprising in Iran.
Mm-hmm. And who exactly are they dealing with when they sign this ceasefire? What regime or what group is actually representing Iran in those ceasefire talks?
The ceasefire talk is that the leading person is Ghalibov, he's the speaker of the house for them. But as the channels mentioned, Ghalibov is also from IRGC. He's a member of IRGC. But he's the leading person on negotiation, but also the person who signed is Iranian president, called Pezeshkian. He's the one who signed the agreement.
Mm-hmm.
But as I mentioned, Iran doesn't have a good nature. They're trying to buy time.
Exactly, and that's always been their
ploy,
they're just stalling for time. And by stalling
exactly.
for time, does that give them a stronger position as far militarily? I mean, obviously they can't stand up to the United States, but they can certainly make it hard on their own people by giving them more time. Is that kind of how you see it?
Absolutely.
Something.
I see that actually. They wanna wait until another administration to come over to do their dealings and willing,
mm-hmm.
filling time. And they are master. I hear a lot this sentence. They're masters of deception.
Mm-hmm.
They tell you that's what they're gonna do. They go back. They do something else.
And so from your perspective, since you know the country way better than we do, is that true?
I believe they are lying. They are showing their face, smiling, and underneath they do something else.
Mm.
And this has been the trend for the past 47 years.
Right.
The West have tried to, this guy is moderate, or this is better than the other one. They're all they end up being the same. It's a medieval regime, and no amount of economic, political concessions can moderate their behavior. It's, the history of their terrorism, the bomb attacks, all of those, it should be the best lesson for any Western diplomat to, when they're negotiating with this, verify and know the history. And I don't know the people that are negotiating with them how deeply they understand this regime. I really hope they succeed, especially for the nuclear program. And do you know, I don't want to talk too long, NCRI is the one that for the first time exposed regimes a nuclear program. And since then, we've had almost 133 different revelation of the people's missiles program, the drone program, and different nuclear activities, how they're using it for to create a bomb. All of those have been exposed by NCRI through their secret forces inside Iran. Mm-hmm. So we know the regime much better than anybody else, I believe.
Yeah, it kind of confuses me a little bit that we've been, you know, at this regime for the last 47 years, and they lie, they don't do what they say they're going to do, and then behind the scenes they're actively working against any agreement that they've made. How do we trust people like that and continue to negotiate with people like that?
We cannot trust a regime like this. This is a regime which even the Iranian people do not trust.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give you one example. More than a year ago, they shut down a civilian airliner and killed more than 165 people, innocent people. This was an Ukrainian airliner, which they shut it down. And for 3 days, the whole regime was denying that they did it. After 3 days, that there were so many evidence showing that they did it, finally they accepted, yes, we did it. But it was a mistake.
Yeah.
Oh, which was not a mistake.
They
did it intentionally.
Sure. Yeah.
I was going to say that this is not a trustworthy regime. Any kind of negotiation is appeasing the evil. You cannot appease Hitler. You cannot appease evil.
We like to try, though. You know, we always think, if we just do it right, right? If you just do good appeasing, it'll work.
No.
It never works. We have to take a really quick break so we can ponder that. And we'll be back with our guests. We have Fred, Shanaz, and Javad. I'm going to make Bill say it next time, and then he can feel the pressure. You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
What is it good for? Nothing. What is it good for? Absolutely.
All my wolves begin to howl. Wake me up, the time is now. Can you hear the drum hit? There's a revolution coming.
Wide awake, the fever burns. Sweat it out.
Now, we implant speakers all over where the Iranian government officials are, and we just play that song secretly in the background.
I just have to say the music is on fire today.
Yes. Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Is it okay if I ask a question?
Fire away,
okay.
Alex.
So before the last break, you were talking about the dishonesty of the powers that be, And the question I have, I'm the producer, by the way, is this conflict, what's going on, just as much a war of stories as it is a kinetic conflict? A war of information that goes back and forth. I'm just curious, that's all.
Can you expand on your question more, please?
Information coming from the Iranian government about what's going on, and the U.S. government, for that matter. There seems to be a lot of back and forth that comes from both sides, informationally, whether it be on the news, whether it be on the Internet, whether it be on social media. There just seems to be a lot of things that are thrown back and forth.
That's a good question.
Shana,
go ahead.
I think the regime is using the Internet, social media, with their apologists in the West to distract and change the talking point in favor of the regime. Mm. The U.S., with the best intentions, the team that they are trying to negotiate a peaceful deal with this government, I think they are being put under pressure, showing, you know, the harms and things that is causing the whole world, the American people. So the regime is using, in my opinion, the social media through their apologists and through the all these extremists within, you know, Western countries, both Europe and U.S., to make the deal somehow in the favor of this regime, the clerical regime. It is a part of war. It's not just a war with the bombs and missiles. It's a political war too. For example, there is an account in the Twitter X that is supposedly it's Ghalibaf, the chief negotiator, and the things that they put out somehow it just contradicts what they're saying during their negotiations, and they never deny those words that come from that account. You know what I mean? This has made things much more complicated, and you have New York Times or Washington Post that they, through their own sources, God knows where those sources come from, trying to meddle in between to defeat, you know, a good intention, Don't get us wrong. We want a negotiation, something to end the nuclear program in Iran, because the regime uses the nuclear program to survive. And I was at a conference in Paris this past week, and one of the things that one of the generals that was talking in our thing. It says with the General Keith Kellogg, you know, that he was the Ukraine envoy or something like that. Yeah. So he said, and we can denuclearize regime is the one that Iranian people can overthrow. So again, it is our job to do that, and I think his words is just stick to my mind. What a brilliant world. I really hope we can get all the nuclear dust out of that country and never, ever allow them to touch it again.
Bill, I would like to add one thing also. I would like to add one thing also. The Iranian government has got a lot of experience in negotiation. For them, it's like a game to play. Therefore, they are practically, for them, they have a lot of experience, and that's what they're doing, and that's what they're good about it. Therefore, really, it's hard to say what direction it's going, because also the Iranian government, supreme leader is gone. Now, there are some internal problems inside Iran government between for the power also somehow. Therefore, I think we need some time. But during the process, no matter what, we believe the behavior of Iranian government is not changing. And also, here I would like to add one more solution to that. I would like to appreciate what Congressman Doug LaMalfa always help us with the resolution. Then, therefore, we have resolution 166, 100, 1148. Congressman Doug LaMalfa always was bless him, always he was supporting our cause. And during those resolutions, we always talking about resistance units, and he support us. Therefore, we appreciated what Congressman Doug LaMalfa, really, we miss him, and we appreciate what he has done for us. Therefore, as far as going in our objective now, we know the Iranian government are not going to change behavior. Therefore, what we do, the NCRI right now, they're going to this next phase. And I provide some information that Maryam Rajavi, based on 10-point plan, she announced the provisional government that we think the Iranian government is going to fail, uprising will come, and we have to be ready. Therefore, that provisional government has got a lot of support from the United States and from the lot of European and from our military, from our former officials. That all thing, I think that will be the solution. That will be the direction. I know there are in media some support for monarchy, but the Iranian people, they don't want to go back to dictatorship, and they want to go to republic, like what we have here. Mm-hmm. And that's the direction we are going, practically.
Yeah, and that makes total sense. I think the regime has been very successful in their negotiations over the past 40 years by this delay and lying and blah, blah, blah. But I don't think they've ever had an administration like we have now that's willing to put some meat behind the threats. Everybody else has appeased them, and it's worked for them. So it's logical that they would continue to negotiate in that fashion. It's always worked for them in the past.
And then they get a pallet of cash.
Yeah, and
right?
Then the next administration comes in and makes good with them and sends them money. And so they just have to wait it out, and they'll continue to play the same game that they've done all along. And I'm just hoping that the current administration doesn't let up. I mean, got these guys on the ropes, and they have to negotiate in good faith, or some bad stuff's going to happen to them. And I think they have to understand that. And I really don't think they do. I think they're just buying time. Does that sound?
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. There is a big factor here. For the last 40 years, the USA never attacked Iranian government, except during the hostage-taking. Remember, we tried to save our hostages that time? But look at what President Trump has done that nobody else has done. For the first time, the USA directly attacked Iranian government and get rid of supreme leaders. This is a big change. I mean, the Iranian government, to me, is a real loser, because when the USA attacked their nuclear site, they get rid of the supreme leader. They don't have anything. They don't have that much for negotiation. That what they had before, to me, is all gone by that attack. I mean, they know any time they want to announce, hey, we got the enrichment from 65% to 80%, they know they're going to get punished. And that's why I think the direction is changed, and that's why Iranian government is changed, is weak, And that's why Marian Rajavi, based on 10-point plan, she knows the situation, and she's announcing that transition government.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because, I mean, obviously they have to change the way they're governing, or we're going to be right back in the same position we were in before. We still have, I mean, Trump's in for another couple of years, so I don't know if they can stall it out that long or not, but I think if we just hold a firm hand and then the people of Iran hang tight and move when they need to move, I think there's a good chance that, you know, you can get rid of these guys.
Yes, absolutely. I agree.
Okay.
Yeah, if you guys had, I mean, I'm always curious, if somebody called and said, all right, the three of you are in charge, we'll do whatever you say, like, what would you tell them to do now on our side? That's all we can control, right?
I will say to recognizing Iranian people for regime change, because we never recognize Iranian opposition. That's why I think if we empower the Iranian opposition, that's really helping. I mean, in the last uprising, we have seen some big donors, they try to promote Reza Pahlavi, but Reza Pahlavi is not representative of Iranian people. Therefore, if we want to help the Iranian people, recognizing Mariam Rajavi's 10-point plan, that's what the Congress has done, that's based on House Resolution 166. If we go that direction, right now I have the list of a lot of former U.S. officials who they are supporting this NCRI 10-point plan and provisional government for example, from our army. A lot of names, General David Phillips, former U.S. military commander. I have, these are all Colonel Wes Martin, former senior anti-terrorist officer. We have from Democrats, Patrick J. Kennedy, bipartisan. We have from Democrats, we have Senator Tercelli. We have Tom Ridge, former U.S. Secretary of Home. These are a lot of people in U.S. there. A lot of General James Jones, the commander of the NATO. We have all these people that presenting what you are talking, that they are feeling that right now is the time to support the Iranian people. I was at one of the conferences, Mr. Mike Pompeo, he said very nicely, he said, what is missing in the equation between Iran and USA that we are not recognizing the Iranian organization, Iranian People for Regime Change? I think, Bill, Aaron, that's the key to go forward. That's the key to bring change in Iran. If we empower that, the Iranian people, they don't want money, they don't want, they have everything. Just recognition, it'd be a big boost, it'd be a big empowering for regime change. That's what I think we want.
And what form does that recognition take? Like, what's the practical, do we just, because the 10-point plan... What's that?
A policy or a statement.
Okay.
That will devastate the regime.
Really?
Regime, absolutely, absolutely. Regime is afraid of the people and the organized system.
Oh, that's true. I mean, I don't think really understand, mm-hmm. We've talked about the 10-point plan. So in short, reject the clerical rule. Freedom of speech, and that goes on, freedom of all sorts of things. Third one is commitment to individual and social freedoms and rights. It doesn't seem like a revolutionary idea, but it's very revolutionary. Fourth one is separation of religion and state. Fifth one, complete gender equality in political, social, cultural, and economic rights. Sixth, an independent judiciary and legal system. We haven't even touched that, and I'm sure that's a nightmare over there.
Definitely.
Seventh is autonomy for and removal of double injustices, which might need more explaining. Eighth is justice and equal opportunities in the realms of employment and entrepreneurship for the people. 9 is protection and rehabilitation of the environment. Gosh, maybe we could send some of our environmentalists over to you guys. Is that too much to ask?
Yeah,
we'd like to we'd like to package them up and have them. We'd like to send them first, actually.
That's a step too far.
Oh, sorry. 10, I muddied the waters. 10 is a non-nuclear Iran, which is something that's like the only one of the 10 that we hear about.
Yeah. The seventh one that you question, autonomy. You know, Iran has different nationalities. They have Kurdish, they have Baluch, they have Arab. So all of those nationalities and different ethnicities under NCRI plan, they have autonomy under the central government. This is what they want. This is what it means.
They want to have a voice instead of being than groups.
Exactly. They could have their own language, their own culture, under the umbrella of the, you know, United
States. See, there isn't anything on that list
market,
that is weird or...
Market economy is something that I don't think we emphasize enough. We want to have a free trade with the world, with the West, and this is how the country can grow, and Iran can be even a powerhouse, you know, on the side of the free world, you know what I mean? So that is the market, free market economy is the number 8 that
yes.
I like to emphasize as well.
We have to take a really quick break, our last one for the for this time. But when we come back, I'd like to know when this 10-point plan was first introduced, because it didn't just happen. It's been around, because even I know about it. So it has to have been there for a while. It's only because Fred told me about it, actually. But he did tell me about it a long time ago. We're going to come right back with our guests, Fred, Shahnaz, and Javad. And you're listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. I should produce your rallies. I have lots of ideas for your songs. So in that list, the one I was curious about was the double injustices part, number 7. Why? What does that mean?
You can go ahead if you want to. Double injustice again, nationalities and ethnicities. So the Kurdish people, for example, they have been subject to, you know, they cannot speak their language, they cannot pursue their cultural activities, and they are the poorest areas in the Iran. And of course, they have been consistently attacked militarily, both by former Shah and the religious dictatorship. So they have been double injustices against them.
I see what you're saying.
Both economically, culturally, and militarily. This whole, the Mahsa uprising started with a Kurdish girl that came traveled to Tehran, and a little bit of her hair was showing up. That's how they beaten her to death. That whole uprising started because of that. So Kurdish people are very strong, very patriotic, and of course that was the reason that they became armed, and they want to have to keep their arms because it's part of their lifestyle, and both the Shah and the clerical regime wanted to disarm them and not to follow their cultural routines and things like that. That's how I see it.
Okay.
Correct me, Red or Javad, if I'm wrong.
What are you, Javad, in there?
Right.
He's probably taking a nap now. He gave up on us.
Well, one thing that I wanted to say is that, just for your listener, is that this regime cannot be trusted in any way. Look at the, Shannon's mentioned about the nuclear program that was exposed by the NCRI more than 20 years ago. If it wasn't for that exposure, the Western countries wouldn't know anything about that. You know, even after that, the first time that they exposed a nuclear site, this and that, you know, there has been a cat and mouse game between the Iranian regime and the Atomic Energy Organization, which have been trying to get into Iran and find out what's going on. The regime does not voluntarily give up the information. They have to go and find it. So this is what it is. And on top of it, they have mentioned that they have more than 500 kilograms of enriched uranium, more than 60%. And they say this is for peaceful purposes. What peaceful purposes?
Yeah, right.
For peaceful purposes, you can only enrich up to 3%, not 60%, not 80%. When you go to that level, that's for atomic bomb.
Right.
And we should not let this regime get hold of atomic bomb. And one other thing that I would like to mention is, you know, I wrote an article at one of the local papers, and in that paper, I mentioned that what can we do short of going to war? And, you know, there are some real things that we can do. I mean, Western countries, all European countries, embassies are open in Tehran. We got to close them. We have to close the Iranian embassy all over Europe. We have to kick out their agents. We have to stop their airlines flying all over Europe. You know, we shouldn't be thinking about ballistic missile. Each airplane can be a ballistic missile.
Sure.
Each airplane flying over the European cities can carry bombs. And they would do the same thing that they did to the civilian airliner, Ukrainian airplane, and killing more than 165 people. So there are some steps that we can do, and regime understands what that means.
You know, you mentioned the Kurds. And here a while back, there was some talk about arming the Kurds and having them lead a revolution. What would the, and they, of course, didn't want to do that, but what would the reaction of the Iranian people be if the Kurds did rise up and kind of led the charge on a regime change? Would the people support that?
Bill, there is one thing also. There are a lot of Kurdish people that they are against the government. And the Kurdish area, there is a party of the Kurdish area, which they are very effective against the Iranian government. But the Kurdish area is located, they're located in one area. They are not spread all over Iran.
Right.
If you want to be effective, you need to have an organization that spread all over Iran. That's why these resistance units are all over in all the more than 300 cities. That's what we need. Locally with one group is very hard. We need to have all over Iran to effectively challenge the IRGC. And also, Aaron, based on your question regarding to the 10-point plan, it was the conference in France, in the European Parliament, in December 2006, that the called Future of Iran, that Maryam Rajavi announced 10-year plan. In that, almost from 2006, practically this 10-point plan started.
Okay. 2006. Okay.
And I should add, this week is the 45th anniversary of NCRI, start of NCRI. It started 3 years after the 1979 anti-monarchy revolution. This is started because there was 500,000 people rallied in Tehran, and Khomeini was brutally suppressed and hundreds of people were killed. So that was the red point for the opposition to start their organization against this clerical rule. And they basically hijacked the anti-monarchy revolution. And why they have stayed this long in power, in my opinion, appeasement has been the reason, from trying to moderate the regime to sending them a plane load of cash by President Obama, trusting them while they are deceitful, you know, deceitful, and all of those has been delayed the overthrow of this regime. Like last week, there was a rally of 100,000 Iranians from all over the world in Paris, which was planned months ahead. They got permission. It was a huge thing. I was there. Jawad was there. And guess what? Just 24 hours before that, the French government canceled the rally. Why? They said they, because of security reasons, they had threats from monarchy extremists and the regime IRGC. And instead of protecting the rally, they actually came and attacked the rally goers. They blocked hundreds of thousands of people that were driving, that were coming from other cities, in Europe, the buses, they wouldn't even let them enter the France. But despite this, more than 300 buses, they came to Paris. And guess what? Some of them started not knowing what's going on. And it was really brutal. I myself attended a conference that was a lot of speakers there. From U.S., the speakers, one of them was General Todd Wolfers. He was a NATO commander. General James Jones, General Keith Clark, former FBI director Louis Free, and most important, Charles Michel. He was a Belgian prime minister and president of EU up to a year and a half ago. We had prime ministers from Canada, from England, from Romania, from Finland, from Belgium. These are all former prime ministers. They were all there in support of Madam Rajavi's 10-point plan and a free Iran. And they all condemn Emmanuel Macron's decision to cancel our rally. And guess what? A day before they canceled the rally, Macron spoke with Iran's foreign minister. We call this appeasement.
Yeah.
They tried to appease this regime. And guess what? In today's news I read, the French ships going through Hormuz, Iran allowing them to go through that.
Yeah.
So, yeah. You know what I mean?
France has problems.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
They cannot put down the yellow flag.
Do you think that type of a rally is possible again in Iran? I mean, do the people have the ability to mass those kinds of numbers and protest the government, or are they still too afraid to do that?
Yes.
Bill, Bill, I think this is a good question. What happened? If there is a big rally in Iran without organization, they're going to get killed.
Right.
Therefore, the big rally by itself is not going to work against the Iranian regime. We have seen what happened in December last year. They killed so many people.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be very smart movement inside Iran, very organized, and has to be with the plan at a small area, a small area, a small area. If you put a lot of people in big area with no protection, that will give a tool to Iranian government to kill a lot of people,
sure.
And practically it's going to bring more damage. So you have to be very smart how you're going to move forward. But one thing, you know, we talk about NCR and all this, this is very important. Always the NCRI is talking about this, their job is two things. First, who's going to change the Iranian regime? That's the question. Yeah, it's good to run a regime. Who's going to do it? We talk about it, the resistance units. Then practically, what are we going to do after that? The NCRI said is we are only for transferring power to the people. And after that, also to oversee the peaceful transfer of power to the Iranian people. Therefore, this is a transition government. This is practically, that's why Araghchi called friends and tell them, stop this demonstration, because they know we are moving in the right direction.
Right.
And that's what...
You know what's happening again? We're running out of time. It never fails. It seems like 2 hours will be a long time. What will we talk about? But it's always over too fast. We would love to have you back on, because obviously this issue isn't going away tomorrow. And we appreciate you taking time on a Sunday to speak with us. We definitely want to do this again.
Yeah, as this evolves, we definitely need to talk some more.
We are doing that, and we know you will do whatever it takes. You're listening to We the People. You can find us at WeThePeopleRadio.us.